This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Vedicheski.
Hello, this is the Inch Podcast, 2012 Summer Edition, recorded Wednesday, July 11th, 2012. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, joined tonight for an Inch Podcast by Inch columnist and editor Mike Eidelbus. Hi, boss.
Good summer to you.
Yes, it has been to me. I hope it's been to you as well.
So far, so good.
Good. Also on board for the podcast, Hockey East senior writer Kevin Zeese. Hello, Kevin.
Greetings, guys. Hope you guys are staying cool out there.
Yeah, and the coolest cat of them all in many locations throughout the summer, CCHA senior writer James V. Dowd. Hi, Dowd.
Good evening, Gladdy. How's your summer?
It's been great. Yourself?
Very, very good. Spent some time in Chicago, back down here on the island now, and good timing because I heard it turned into like 100-degree weather after I left.
Yeah. They don't have an ocean in Chicago yet. But they apparently got one in Duluth.
All right.
We kid because we care. Let's start with a little college hockey talk. We'll have a little of that. We'll have a little bit of other thoughts as we generally have a deterioration-heavy summer podcast, and we'll probably have another one here in a few weeks, but wanted to check in with an Inch Podcast, and we'll start with some of the news from late June, which was another conference affiliation change where University of Connecticut will be joining Hockey East for the starting for the 2014-15 season. We've got a little more on that, the story that posted in conjunction with this podcast, but let's bring it to Kevin now for some of your thoughts and what you found out and what you might have come to think in the preliminary stages following that announcement.
UConn is going to be a obviously everybody knows at this point they are non-scholarship in Atlantic Hockey and going to have to make that jump. They've already announced they're going to do so in giving the full scholarship amount, the 18 scholarships. But as of about a week or two ago, weren't sure as to whether or not they were going to phase that in over the course of the next two seasons, or if they're going to give some of that scholarship money to some of their existing players. But they're definitely going to be behind the eight ball to get started here. There's a lot of things and challenges that they're going to really have to overcome. The venue is going to be one. Building a fan base is another. The scholarship issue. This is a program that's not won a whole lot of games in Atlantic Hockey over the past few seasons, and they're joining a league that's won several national championships in the past few years. So definitely going to be an uphill battle for that UConn franchise.
I think that their situation is going to have to change a little bit in terms of academic and athletic support as far as scholarships, like you mentioned. I think there's got to maybe take on a little bit more of a hockey culture in a campus that has been thoroughly represented in terms of a national scene by basketball.
And I think that's going to be the biggest thing. You mentioned the basketball, and to me that was one of the concerns that I've really had. They've mentioned that they're going to play their conference games not on campus, but rather in downtown Hartford, the XL Center.
The
former Hartford Civic Center, the old home of the Hartford Whalers. Well, that's currently the home of the Connecticut Whale of the AHL. UConn's men's and women's basketball teams also play a handful of games there. Just how easy of a time are they going to have getting dates and playing games when people are used to seeing college hockey games? That's something that just how far down is the hockey program going to fall within that pecking order? And I don't know if that's a question that's necessarily been looked at this point.
I'm sure it was at least considered.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
To get to this point.
there's a lot of the little logistical items like that that, you know, there's a lot of questions, I think, that people are going to have in the interim period here where, you know, they've got a couple of years. And just the question will be how much growth can they do in those 2 years before joining the league?
I mean, you look at this situation, and on the surface, you know, if you're just a sports fan, you're thinking, oh, wow, UConn's coming in. You know, not specifically a college hockey fan. You're thinking, oh, wow, hockey's getting UConn. That'll be great. And, you know, it kind of will be, I guess, in the sense that, you know, UConn's a pretty big name. You know, and you could probably also make the argument that, you know, maybe this is a good time to step up hockey-wise, because, I mean, their men's basketball program's in a little bit of hot water. You know, who knows where that ship's going to go over the course of the next couple years with some of the academic issues that they've had. But still, you know, it just seems that they have so far to go to get to even a competitive level in Hockey East. And I think we talked about this. It might have been Gladdy and I right after the news came out that UConn was going to be added to Hockey East, that, you know, I think Penn State has a better chance of being competitive right out of the bat or right out of the gate than UConn does in Hockey East.
No, I agree with that.
You know, they're going to have the building. You know, they've got, even though they haven't played Division I hockey, they've got, you know, more name recognition. And in this case, I think not having a history helps them, you know, more so than UConn having a history, not a very good history, but a history nonetheless. So,
And Penn State also does have a built-in fan base, a small one at this point, given their club team. But, you know, they do have a very rabid culture down there in State College that is going to help them out at the very beginning. And that's definitely not something that UConn has at this point.
Let me say this, though, about UConn and Hockey East. One thing that we've seen, I think, recently within Hockey East membership is there is room for upward mobility there.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 2 years, UMass Lowell and Merrimack have been in the national tournament, and they had to go a long way to get there and did so, you know. So I think that, you know, while BC is pretty steady and some of the other powerhouse programs are generally consistently good, you know, you can make a run, and teams have shown that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we've seen Northeastern do it too, and
yeah,
I think Providence.
Providence, I think, is going to be this year's team. Yeah,
Vermont was not that long ago in the Frozen.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say that. I just think it gives them more visibility and more of a chance to get that upper mobility. Like, as long as they were playing in a league that, you know, they're not bringing in very attractive names, like, it's not going to draw attention to people. I mean, I think people know Boston College, people know Boston University, people know, you know, Maine and New Hampshire, and I think that that'll start to generate some interest and energy around the program. And once you have that interest and energy in the program, I think that, you know, it can reflect well on the team and that, and then it'll start to show its face in recruiting, and then you'll be able to take advantage of this opportunity as you guys are talking about to move up, because I think that you're right, there is upper mobility in that league.
And there's a lot of kids coming out of Connecticut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. Then they got the prep school kids up there, and then you know, Michigan's had a handful of those the last few years, and
yeah.
You know, I think it's because of that cachet they have from basketball and maybe a little bit from football. At least a few years ago, you know, I think they went to a BCS game and people started to know their name on that front too. They can they've got that brand, and I think it could kind of catch on. I agree with you that I think Penn State's got an easier go, but I think that this is a good step for them and could really help them take that, you know, make that progress they need to make to take it to the next level. I think they were going to be stagnant as long as they were competing with schools that don't have that that same brand recognition that UConn does.
Roto.
One real quick sort of addendum to that, I guess, is going to be interesting to see. Hockey East, obviously the only league in the country where all teams don't qualify for the playoffs. It'll be interesting to see once Notre Dame joins in, giving them 11, and then UConn giving them 12, to what form they go with their playoffs.
Yep.
Whether they go with more of like an ECAC hockey model where all 12 teams go and four get a bye, whether they try and do a Final Five type of deal. It'll be interesting to see exactly what how that playoff format shakes out in a couple of years.
Yeah. Yep. Let's stick around with some Hockey East related chatter. And as of the recording of this podcast, we're pretty sure that UMass is still looking for a head coach after the resignation of Don Cahoon. They've been pursuing some other coaches and haven't yet landed or settled on a head coaching choice at this point in the process. What, Kevin, from what you've seen and interacted with the UMass program, what's attractive about that job and maybe what are some of the obstacles?
Well, I think the first thing that comes to mind with me is the facility there is pretty nice. The Mullins Center, it's one of two Olympic size rinks in Hockey East, UNH being the other one. But it's a really nice venue. Their facilities are top notch. You know, they're a fully supported Division I program across the board. Their football team's making a jump to the Mid-American Conference. I believe it's this fall. You know, so it's definitely a program that has shown that they have the ability to put resources behind the programs when they've chosen to do so. And I think that's sort of the big thing. We mentioned that you know, there's a lot of players coming from Connecticut. UMass isn't all that far away. Probably about you know, at most a 30-minute drive away from Hartford. So, you know, you're sort of in the best of both worlds there, where you're close by the recruiting hotbed of Connecticut. You're also not too far from Boston and the Boston area schools there as well. So, you know, it's not a bad job, but I think there's probably something going on behind the scenes that is making it not an attractive job to a lot of coaches here. You mentioned Rand Pecknold was one of the names that had been rumored to have been offered. Paul Pearl from Holy Cross is another one. You know, I would say in both of those cases, at least in terms of the program, the facilities, the conference, that's obviously a step up. So there's got to be something else that's holding these guys back from making that type of a jump.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about what goes on at UMass. This is probably one of those situations where we need to tap into Jeff Howe, the alum, and find out a little bit about their culture. But, you know, I've kind of kept tabs on him from a distance just because of some of the things Jeff has said about him in the past. And, you know, obviously him being a UMass grad, it seems like they're kind of going in 100 different directions as an athletic department.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had obviously a great basketball program, then they tailed off, and then they decide, well, we need to get better in basketball, and then meanwhile they're like, oh, we need to do this with football, and, you know, we got to build a stadium, and then, no, we're going to play it in Foxborough. You know, it just seems like they're and I don't, you know, I've never met the athletic director there. I don't know him, but it just seems like there's no real direction or guidance from the top. And yeah, you know, it's kind of like they're, you know, chasing butterflies to a certain extent, going in all these different directions, trying to accomplish all these different things, and without any real blueprint. And I think that, you know, when you listen closely to some of the rumblings that we were hearing after Don Cahoon stepped down, I think that some of those administrative issues were really beginning to come to a boil.
I don't want to speculate too much on the culture at UMass, but one of the things that I had run into in the past with other schools, non-hockey playing schools, was sort of not knowing where they fit in the scheme of things. And by that I mean a school that's, you know, a 100 miles away from a major capital, state capital, wanting to be included in that state capital's media market and not understanding, you know, where things lie in that. And, you know, part of me wonders, is there pressure on the part of UMass to join the Boston core when you're not really actually in Boston? You know, and that's one of those questions, you know, as you mentioned with Bus, with sort of changing directions and stuff, you kind of wonder, is this something that, you know, they're trying to be something more than what they are? And I don't know if, you know, that's, I would probably venture a guess and say that maybe there's some of that going on behind the scenes, but, you know, again, it's a great facility. It's in a good league. It's, you know, there are reasons why that program is attractive to people. Just a little curious as to why so many people have been kind of pulling away from that job.
And there's really no comparison I think anywhere in college hockey to that athletic department in terms of, you know, their basketball's a high level, their football is just moving up, and you know, where do they fit? They're not obviously to the level of BC across the board. You know, BU obviously has their niche in Boston, and you know, there's the Ivies around them, and they're, you know, there's a school, big school out in the middle of nowhere, and you know, it's just a very odd, unique situation, I think.
Well, the same could be said for UConn though as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very similar situation with the two schools, and they're not all that far apart from each other.
But UConn has the state to itself, more or less, as far as being the large.
It's the number one show in the state of Connecticut. Yeah,
right.
Well, there's some other good schools there, but
and their brand from basketball, I think, carries over a little bit, whereas UMass, I don't think, has that appeal. You know, if you think about UMass football, and you say, okay, well, they, you know, they're moving up to Division I, and that they're still going to be second fiddle to Boston College in that state. You know, have played in the Big East and played at a high level and has produced NFL players. So, I guess that's where I think that situation might not be analogous. But I think you're right in the sense that it's, you know, hard to know where it fits in. You know,
they seem almost a little St. Cloudish to me. As far as.
Just, I don't know enough about St. Cloud's situation.
From a hockey sense, as far as, you know, in Minnesota, there's a fair number of people, you know, it's a fairly well-attended school. Everybody knows St. Cloud, and they're, you know, they're close enough to Minneapolis, St. Paul to think that, you know, to be, with the way the Minneapolis, St. Paul area is growing, I mean, they're not that far out from the suburbs, but yet they don't really fit with that.
Yeah.
Just that from a proximity standpoint, but being as far as being close, but not quite close enough.
Yeah.
It's a really odd situation.
Well, we'll see how that ends up, and
they'll get a coach.
We will confirm that they will have a head coach this season.
The last thing I read today was about a USHL guy from Cedar Rapids. It was their local paper that they were saying he interviewed but hadn't been offered. But then the president of the team said that. So I think Mark Carlson, I think, is his name, is the latest thing. So
yeah.
Well, if it works out for if hiring a USHL coach works out for them like it did for Western Michigan, then.
Or the Norfolk Admirals.
So.
Yeah. Doubt. Alum. JVD. Former beat writer and staffer at the Michigan Daily. Daily's in the news. thoughts on what's going on with that?
You know, I think
need a little background.
Well, maybe I was gonna say maybe we should give a little bit of background first in case.
Go ahead.
I think so there's a student journalist, at least I believe he's still a student. He'll be still on staff there. I don't know Matt personally. Matt, I believe it's Slovin is how his last name is pronounced, and he wrote an article that said, quoting an unnamed source, it said that Jacob Trouba, who is ninth overall, I think, to the Winnipeg Jets this summer and is scheduled and signed to attend the University of Michigan in the fall, was offered a $200,000 payment to instead go to the OHL and play for the Kitchener Rangers. And the Kitchener Rangers kind of responded saying that they're going to sue Matt and the newspaper for, I don't know if it's libel, slander, I'm not really well-versed in what exactly the legal term is, but I mean, to me, the whole thing's a little ridiculous. It seems like a scare tactic on behalf of Kitchener. I think this kind of thing happens in journalism at all. I worked at the Daily. I know that they take things very seriously, and there was, no point that, at least when I was there in my experience and having worked, as high as being on the management and editorial board, management desk and editorial board there and editing a section of the paper, we never, we took things really seriously. And so, I'm sure that Matt had his good source and believe it and took it for it. And, I'm sure he'll stand by it. But to me, the whole thing is, I don't really know what Kitchener expects to achieve, suing a student run nonprofit organization. I guess I'm trying to think of, trying to think of what I want to say about it because I don't want Inch to get sued. But I think it's as dangerous for Kitchener as it could be a benefit.
Yeah, I mean,
by the way, we saw this before with Jeff Jackson. I don't remember the franchise, the OHL franchise, but he made a similar thing. I think it was Cam Fowler. Made a similar insinuation or statement, and there was threats to sue him back then, and that never happened. So,
yeah,
that was back. That was like 2 or 3 years ago, and that was
Fowler, right?
Yeah, it was Fowler with Kitchener, and Kitchener threatened to sue, and Windsor threatened to sue.
Well, Kitchener, I think in Kitchener's case, well, in that case, I think Kitchener like. At least had some case for damage because if at the time, I think they owned his rights or something like that, and then same thing, denials. There's no way he never was offered payments, and Fowler said that, and then Kitchener kind of let him go, and he ultimately ended up signing with Windsor, and so that one at least I think Kitchener. Maybe suffered some damage, or you could argue that they suffered some damage from that if since he ended up playing for a competitor. But in this case, by all accounts, and the people that I talk to that know more about this Jacob Trouba situation than I have always said that they expect him to play this fall. They expect him to play at the University of Michigan this fall, and he has the kind of commitment that the coaches believe that he's going to play there, and have no reason to believe he's not going to stand by his commitment. So I don't see him jumping to Windsor or London or anybody else. So I guess I'm not sure what Kitchener is trying to gain out of this. And frankly, I think they have more to hide.
He's been pretty steadfast in saying all along that he's going to Michigan.
Reminds me of Jack Johnson a little bit.
But we're at a point in time where, even if you say it, you got to keep asking.
Look at the goalies the last 2 years. particularly Jack Campbell.
But I think that, and I'm not. It's an interesting case from a legal perspective. What little I know about the law, Just because, you know, you're talking about an American entity and a Canadian entity, and it's filed in Canadian court, and, you know, what, you know, the jurisdiction and how the interaction between the two countries, how that all works out. And, you know, the other interesting thing, obviously, is that we've all heard these rumors for years that this kind of stuff was happening. You know, without naming any names, we've all heard from one person or another, or one source or another, that, you know, these kind of payments, these under the table payments, you know, were happening all the time. You know, not that we're confirming that they happened, but, you know, those rumors have been floating around. So I think that I think the real interesting thing about it is something you touched on, is that, you know, does Kitchener really want to go through this and potentially have this Pandora's box opened up? I mean, everything's going to have to be put out there on the table. You know, and the other thing too is, you know, from a journalistic standpoint, you know, this writer, the student, Matt Slovin, you know, he's not obligated to give up his source.
Right.
So,
well, and that's, you know, I believe, I'm not 100% sure about this. Again, I'm not a lawyer. I believe there's some component of the law that says, that there, you know, there has to be intent to damage as well.
Yes.
And I don't think Matt wrote this story, I'm going to expose the Kitchener Rangers, for offering him $200,000 when they're supposed to, saying they only pay their players $45 a week. I don't think that's what the intention was. The intention was like, hey, this threat that Trouba might not show up on campus in the fall, you know, it could be Jack Campbell all over again. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that that's all he was going for. I mean, if you were, knowing, you know, the ambition of student journalists and people that are trying to do that, if, you know, if Matt was trying to do an expose on, under the table payments from OHL teams, or suspected under the table payments from OHL teams to, guys who are committed to go to colleges, I think he would go about it way differently than that. This would be a pretty lazy way to do it. And he's a better writer than that, and a better journalist than that. And so I really think all he was trying to say was, hey, Kitchener's trying really hard to get Trouba, maybe we should worry about this. And so I don't know that there's any case there, in the first place, at least as far as I understand it. I just think the whole thing is just ridiculous.
All right, let's get away from the lawsuit part of it and the Trouba part of it, and say big picture. Let's talk a little bit about the big picture of this whole thing. There's been a pattern over the last, you know, several years of kids breaking college commitments to go play in major junior. I'm on the side of things that almost like, so what? You know, obviously people at North Dakota and Boston University and other programs that this affects feels much differently. And I guess, I mean, some people will say you want the best players playing college hockey. I'm like, for what, though? A year? You know?
I'm going to agree with you on that, Gladdy. I mean, I want the kids in college hockey who want to be there, want to play. You know, I've seen a lot of kids who sort of were putting in their time because they were drafted. They knew they had a contract that was going to be waiting for them, whether it was at the end of 2, 3, 4 years, you know, and didn't really put in the effort needed on a game by game basis. And it was immensely frustrating. You know, you get the players who had a lot more to play for. And I think that they really made the game a lot more enjoyable to me, you know, is the kids who actually want to be in college and want to be playing college hockey.
You know, my problem is less. I agree with you guys. I want to see the players who want to be there. I want to see the best college hockey product, which I think is players who want to be there and it's good. You know, it's still going to be a good skill level. My problem is with, you know, these guys who sign letters of intent, who the coaches are planning, you know,
yeah, that's the one, yeah,
being there.
Yeah.
You know, like Jack Campbell, if not for Sean Hunwick, Jack Campbell really screwed Michigan. You know, and Sean Hunwick turned out to be pretty all right, but, you know, he wasn't the plan. And, you know, it's a whole nother thing if, you say, okay, well, I know Jack Campbell's coming and he wants to go to the NHL, so he's only going to come here for 2 years. And so I can plan ahead for that. But when you find out this time of the year, or maybe June, July, August of that year that, you know, not good, Jack Campbell's not coming. That's unfair to the coaches, and that's unfair to the players on the team who are at a competitive disadvantage because of that person's selfishness. And
yeah, the Miller kid last year from North Dakota.
Yeah, if you've got a guy in your coach's office on the marker boards, you know, slotted in to play second line center or first line wing, and you know, or be in the top defense pairing and run your power play, that's certainly a burden and a bind, but. If that's the recruiting disadvantage that those elite programs have, I think they overcome that in other ways in the big picture.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, at the end of the day, kids are going to go where they want to go at this point in time.
Yeah, and
I mean, there's nothing stopping them.
You're in the business of dealing with the brains and talents of 17 and 18 year old kids. So, you know, it's a hazard of the job.
And you're not the one, and they're the ones holding all the power.
Yeah.
Or their families or their advisors or, right. You know, so.
Or the team that maybe drafted them.
That too. I mean, and obviously that's a factor. And you can just hope for the best, but, you know.
I don't think the problem's going.
I don't think the problem is going away, nor do I think it's...
It's not a crippling problem.
No, I think that's the best way to put it.
It's unfortunate circumstance.
How many kids do you think it affects a year?
A handful, maybe.
I was going to say no more than a half dozen a year.
Well, I'd stretch that out to... I'd say if there's six kids who go, then that impacts, you know,
yeah,
you can stretch that out a little bit. It impacts the 2014 commit who, you know, finishes summer school early and jumps in as a 17-year-old in your lineup, you know, 1 year early. It affects the, you know, the other kids on that team if you really want to stretch it out that far. You know, the 25 other guys are affected, but I wouldn't go that far. You know, so, you know, there's some fallout for sure. But that's, it is what it is. I want to move on. You guys want to move on a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit further west. News, formally announced today at a press conference and event about one of our favorite things, more outdoor hockey. And before we started recording, Bus said maybe this one's okay. February 17th, 2013, doubleheader in Chicago scheduled for Soldier Field. Minnesota will play Wisconsin, and Miami will play Notre Dame. And to the best of our knowledge, those will be league games for both of those. Both of those contests will count toward WCHA standings and CCHA standings. So, Bus, why is this one okay?
Well, I there's two things that I really like about it. One is the doubleheader. You know, you're bringing four teams in. You know, it makes it a little bit more of an event. And, you know, of the four, three of them are, you know, no slight to Miami. Three of them are pretty well known outside of college hockey. You know, you say, especially in the Chicago area, when you say Wisconsin and you bring in Notre Dame and Minnesota, you know, those three schools especially have pretty big name recognition in and out that area, and I think that's going to generate some buzz in a market that you know is obviously a burgeoning base for college hockey talent. You know, we see more and more kids from Illinois come into college hockey. excuse me. You know, and the second team, and that kind of leads into the second thing that I like about it is the site itself in Chicago. You know, I mean, it's third largest city in the United States. It's, you know, it's obviously a huge media market, and it's gonna generate some buzz and some interest outside of you know, maybe the normal realm or scope of college hockey. You know, it's not going to be a game at a Camp Randall or a game at a TCF Bank Stadium, or you know, it's going to be. I mean, it's a Soldier Field's a big time venue,
yeah,
historic venue, and it, you know, there's going to be a lot of people. It's going to be traditional powers playing in a non traditional market, and I think in front of a lot of non traditional media. You know, you're going to have a lot of Chicago media focused on it, and because of the size and the volume, you know, it's going to generate some waves. I think probably nationwide.
You know, I made light in the name before we were on here because Hockey City Classic. I lived in Chicago for almost 5 years and never once heard anybody call it that, but. You know, with your point there, Bus, it's interesting that it could, you know, it's almost like a test or like a, you know, a marketing ploy. I don't, ploy has negative connotation, like a, you know, a marketing opportunity that's a market that's kind of untapped for college hockey, but there's a lot of alumni, especially with the Big Ten coming up from every single one of those schools in that city. And then, you know, you've got Notre Dame that's not too far away, and so it's a market that could be, you know, the site of tournaments or something that could actually generate interest. And so this, you know, I guess I'm trying to think of how to say it. Like, you know, seeing there'll be a lot of Wisconsin fans there. There'll be a lot of Notre Dame fans there. There'll be a lot of Minnesota fans there, and there'll be you know, relatively a lot of Miami fans there. Obviously, they don't have the numbers that they do, but all four of those schools have a good alumni base in the city of Chicago, and those people go to bars, they take a bus to the game, and, you know, there has the potential to have a lot of energy there and leave a lasting impression on people that might be able to generate the energy to have some kind of, like, if not the Big Ten championship, but, like, maybe they play a weekend of Big Ten games, you know, somewhere in Chicago, and people remember, hey, I went to that thing in Soldier Field. That was pretty cool. Or maybe it's something that becomes somewhat regular, and, you know, they swap through some of those teams, Big Ten teams and Notre Dame, that have that big alumni presence there. And Miami has a relatively big one. So I think it's a good marketing move.
I think, yeah, I think you kind of stumbled onto something there. As far as it being a test balloon for college hockey in that city in the future, you know, because there's going to be obviously going to be a buzz around it with the teams that are there and being at Soldier Field, and Dowd, you'd know this better than I would. As far as, you know, I think the hockey fans in the city are a little bit familiar with college hockey just because of obviously Jonathan Toews. You know, people kind of know his background a little bit and playing in North Dakota and whatnot. But yeah, I think that if people around the city see what college hockey can bring, and obviously this is a non-typical event, it's not something they're going to do every year. But you know, if they can see the potential of it, I think you might see some future events in and around the city in the future. If it's not a Big Ten tournament, maybe it is a doubleheader. Yeah. Or like you said, a Big Ten doubleheader. I mean, the Big Ten offices are right there. You know, if you get Michigan playing there against Wisconsin and maybe Minnesota and Ohio State, or, you know, I don't think it really matters. I mean, there's enough alums from all the Big Ten schools there where something like that could fly, or in Notre Dame or Michigan State, or, you know, I think those are the obvious ones. But yeah, I think it could be enough, especially with the Big Ten right around the corner. It could be enough to to really pique people's interest in having more college hockey in that area.
Yeah, and I think the outdoor, the ceremony that goes along with an outdoor game, you know, just the energy and the different feel and stuff like that, will generate like more fond memories. And so then the next time they come back, it might be easier to say, we're going to play this at the United Center. We're going to play this at, out in Rosemont at Allstate Arena. We're going to play it somewhere else. And there'll be interest there because people remember the experience they had, and what a good product it is. I mean, those are shaping up as some pretty good teams for next year. And so it should be pretty good hockey as well.
One point that you guys didn't make yet that I like about this is the date itself. We're recording this podcast because it's the worst day on the sports calendar in a given year, when there's no games or anything else really going on. There's also, if this is first, that week after the Super Bowl is second, as far as really kind of not much going on. So I think it can carry some weight, because there isn't a lot of competition.
Let's also throw out there that it's February 17th is a Sunday.
Yep.
But President's Day is the following day.
Yeah, perfect.
There's going to be a lot of hungover Badger fans.
From a bowl game.
So, from a bowl game.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's a good point. There's always that – there is that hangover from the Super Bowl, and, you know, people are waiting for –
yeah, if you do it in the first semester, you're up against football.
Yeah, it just won't fly. It's too early.
Yeah. So, I like that about it.
And I'm very happy to see that it's during President's Day, so –
I was going to say, that just made my trip there.
It makes it more tolerable for those of us within easy distance of getting there.
Yeah.
It makes it more tolerable for those of us who aren't in easy distance of getting there. Yeah.
Well, you can go there for other reasons.
That's true.
It's not like it's off your...
I know a few people there.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's sort of your base.
Your domestic base.
When you're not abroad.
I did just mention the slow sports night. Apparently ESPYs were awarded tonight, and Kobe Baker winner Jack Conley was nominated for an ESPY for best college athlete, or male best college athlete. So I don't know how that award ended up turning out, but congratulations to Jack on that. Some of the other guys that were nominated were, I believe there's a baseball player from Florida, maybe.
Yeah.
Robert Griffin, quarterback from Baylor, basketball player from Kentucky, Davis, who was the first pick in the NBA draft. So. We'll see what happens with that.
So Conley's going to finish fifth?
I don't know.
there's only four guys. No, there is.
Five or six, yeah. Best I can tell, none of those other guys played against Wisconsin and Nebraska-Omaha, and I've heard of them, so that means that's important. So he had that aspect of the vote going, even though those teams were under 500. So you got that. Even though he might not win an ESPY, he will probably get a couple power play assists.
I'm tracking it as we speak.
Okay.
And they haven't come up. They haven't come to that award yet. Brittany Griner did win for female college athlete of the year.
Oh, good.
Conley got a second assist.
Is ESPY actually a Swedish word?
No, that's Espen. No, that's Norwegian. He'll be up for a...
He'll be a Swedish ESPY next year.
Der Flugen Network,
yeah.
Award. So. Best video cameo with him and the Swedish chef.
Yeah.
And Aha. I think they're from Sweden. Roxette. They're from Sweden.
There you go. There you go. Stanley Cup. LA Kings. Kind of a fun 2 months. I think this playoff was maybe a little less remarkable than some of the ones in the past.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
I think it was good. Less remarkable in terms of the, you know, we didn't have any of those amazing games where we went 3-4 overtimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But big picture, looking at what the Kings did, you know, knocking out number one. First of all, barely getting in.
Yeah.
To the playoffs.
Yeah.
Knocking off the Canucks.
That was their hardest series.
Yeah, and then knocking off the Blues. Like, well, not knocking off the Blues so much as destroying them.
Yeah.
And then destroying the Coyotes.
I thought the Coyotes and Blackhawks series was a good series.
Yeah, that was. There was a lot going on there.
That was entertaining.
Yeah, the deciding game, just the you know my allegiance.
Season ticket holder James Dowd of Chicago Blackhawks.
Well, my power went out and I had to leave home and go to a bar to watch it. There were Phoenix fans, or something like that. I found that hard to believe too. They claimed to be Phoenix fans.
There was a cockfight going on. Everybody was watching High Lie.
Yeah, so, you know, I will say one thing about the finals. I thought that I'm not trying to take anything away from the Kings. I think they deserve it. I'm happy to see them win. The last game, it kind of sucks that I think the refs kind of, like, decided that game pretty early on. Or I can't remember what
with
point
the checking from behind call.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's just that ended it so quickly, and I guess it was kind of anticlimactic. I mean, I can remember watching, the deciding game of the finals for as far back as when the Penguins beat the Blackhawks, and that one was pretty anticlimactic, you know, just because that 5-minute penalty and all of a sudden it's a blowout.
I thought it was the right call.
Of course you did, Dustin Brown.
I mean, it was the right call. Could they have called something just prior to that?
Yeah, that as well. Yeah.
On the Kings guy.
Yeah.
It's debatable.
I wasn't making a comment, I guess. It might have come out that way. I wasn't making a comment on the call or the officiating. It just kind of sucked.
The circumstance was that it was 4-0, and why am I going to watch the last two periods?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was getting at more than a commentary on the call.
Because it was the last game of the year, and I was going to savor it.
It's going to be 5 months before you can watch another game, yeah.
If we're lucky.
Yeah, good point.
NHL-wise. But that brings up, you mentioned the series, and in that one ended up 4-2, and obviously it was closer than that because those first two games were they both overtime? I mean, I know the first one was for sure.
Yeah, I think the first two.
Kopitar.
The Hawks and Coyotes?
No, the Kings and Devils.
Oh, yeah, they were.
Yeah.
And then, but as far as series... like memorable series. I mean that, you mentioned the Chicago Phoenix one. That one was pretty. There was a lot going on there between cheap shots and whatnot. And
Rangers Devils didn't have as much sizzle as I expected it would.
The regular season did, and then playing the playoffs, and it was.
You know, the series that really stood out to me was Rangers Ottawa. I mean, that was a good series, I thought.
Yeah.
And Caps-Boston was good, too.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Caps-Rangers was good.
Yeah, Rangers had a nice run.
Yeah, they did.
So.
I think, but I don't think you can really argue with who won. I mean, there's no question the best team over the 2 months won.
That is true. And they had actual talent on their team.
Yeah.
I mean, they were carried by a goalie, but they had players as well.
Well, and I think a lot of people, there's a lot of talk about them being the 8th seed and coming back and winning, but people need to remember, like, what happened. I thought maybe it was mid-December. They were just a mess.
Yeah, right at the trade deadline.
And then things started to happen for them, and so they really weren't an 8, you know, they really weren't playing like an 8 seed going into the playoffs. They happened to be that way just because they dug themselves a hole at the beginning of the year, but
it was after they got Carter.
Changed coaches.
Wow. Yeah, they changed coaches.
Dustin Brown's name got in the paper, and then he turned into a point-a-night guy. I probably watched most of the last 25 games of the Kings regular season. Like, they had it. You know, you could see it. And I probably said it on some of the podcasts back then, that team's got something going for it. And, you know, the way I looked at it during the playoff run with LA was this. If you had to, you know, go to overtime and you say, okay, pick the guy who's going to score the game-winning goal for LA, you could name about a dozen guys out of the 18 skaters and say, yeah, I could see that happening.
Yep.
And that, to me, was what made them the best team through the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Well, not just that, but they had their players really from top to bottom were playing their best.
Yeah,
they were over that period. Yeah. Like, you know, Jarrett Stahl was great, and I thought he was great.
Yep.
Richard Penner was great.
Penner got good, yeah.
Trevor Lewis was great.
Yep, exactly.
Could have gone to Michigan, but
yeah, that was actually exactly what I was thinking every time I saw
that. That's what I was thinking too. Every time I saw that guy, like, he could have gone to Michigan.
Well, Jack Johnson. Oh no, Jack Johnson.
Yeah,
Jack Johnson was great in that he netted Jeff Carter.
Yeah.
And Kopitar, obviously.
Those teams that Jack Johnson played on, like, that's the second year in a row, because he played with his former Michigan defensive partner, Matt Hunwick, who got traded midseason away from the Bruins.
That's right.
And then Johnson got traded away, and then I think Andrew Ebbett might have briefly, from that team, might have briefly been with the Blackhawks the year that they won. Huh. That's that team is cursed, I guess.
So just look at the waiver wire and whichever team trades a Wolverine or gets rid of them in the middle of the year, they're the cup favorite.
Yeah, keep an eye on Pacioretty this season.
I don't think he's going to get dealt.
As he goes.
Well, Alec Martinez from Miami was on that team.
Oh, yeah. I like their D. I like their whole team. They had a good team.
Well, they don't have Willie Mitchell anymore.
No, he don't.
He gone to the Wilds. Your front runners for next year's Cup.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations to the Wilds on winning the Stanley Cup. We won't have to have this discussion next summer.
Willie Mitchell is a huge pickup.
Yeah. I don't know, whatever.
Don't do it. Do it. Do it.
I just...
Because I'm going to follow.
I don't know. I just want to see what happens when, once again, they're, you know, it's Christmas time and they're 11-13-4, and people are like, oh, wait, I thought we were supposed to be awesome. You know, like, well, you
see the 2012 Detroit Tigers?
Yeah, still the Wilds.
Well, to their credit, the Wilds were number one in the NHL at the end of November. And then just...
I lost you there.
Last season, at one point, they had the best record in the NHL.
Oh, that's good.
Like in mid-November. Then they just
didn't make the playoffs.
And they soiled themselves, and
so
that's all she wrote.
So yeah, that's good.
But really, let's be honest about the. I mean, I don't know. They'll be better. Like, how can they be worse?
Yeah. I mean, the two guys they got are the most talented players they've had, other than Gabrick, in their franchise history.
Yeah. I don't know. Wes Walls would disagree.
Yeah. Richard Clark.
Jim Dowd?
Oh, well, we forgot about the pride of Brick, New Jersey.
Yeah. Anyway.
It's pretty good at Lake Superior State.
Considering their best defenseman last year was Jared Spurgeon.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the Coyotes got that other guy that was actually a little bit good, right? The offensive blue line guy?
Zidlitsky.
No. I don't know.
Oh, they have Tommy Gilbert. I forgot about him, too.
Yeah.
And we should mention Justin Schultz ended up in Edmonton.
Yes.
Former Spartan Jeff Petrie got a new contract from Edmonton.
As long as we're sharing the Edmonton love, give a little stick salute to a good friend of college hockey and their new head coach, Ralph Krueger.
Yes.
I don't know him at all.
I got to know him when he was still coaching the Swiss national team, but his son Justin was at Cornell for 4 years and really good hockey mind. He's a guy who really knows what he's talking about. Obviously, I mean, he's going to coach an NHL team, but just a great person in general. So really happy to see him get the NHL head coaching gig there.
Yeah. Brent Burns was the guy I was trying to think of. Plus.
Oh, he got traded.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
I was just pouring through the UFA tracker. There weren't any. Basically, all the big names are, well, Shane Doan, I guess, is the only one.
Semin.
Oh, well, him.
That guy.
That invisible man. Glad he's buddy Matt Termina is a Lightning.
Tampa, yeah. Tampa, Syracuse.
That's right. Wojtek Wolski is a Cap.
Polska,
Kielbasa. Christian Hansen, former Notre Damer, he's a Bruin.
Something's brewing.
The Iron Chef, John Matsumoto, is with the Sharks now.
Adam Burrish, too.
That's right. Adam Burrish. Nate owes me money for him, by the way.
Nate, when you're listening to the podcast on your drive home,
send me a dollar.
You will bust a buck.
No, it was more than a buck.
How was it?
I don't know what it was. I'll have to go back in the archives.
Happy hour draft at Paul Revere's Tavern or something.
Yeah, I thought it was on a podcast. We bet that.
We'll have to go into that musty old room where we store the old podcasts and try and find it.
Museum of Radio and TV and get the reel-to-reel back.
Yeah.
I just had a, I just saw, Al Montoya, he's now in Winnipeg.
Yes. Gone from the Islanders.
Derp St. John's.
I got everything checked off on the list, guys. Anybody else have anything they wanted to bring to the table here? Deterioration? Anything else?
Yeah, I was just... Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Yours is more important.
Not really, but I was just going to say...
Trust me,
no, it's definitely baseball related, so it's not that important. But well, it wasn't about the Braves. Calm down. I was gonna say I was thinking that the All-Star Game weekend, this whole All-Star Game 2 days, could be a sign of good things to come for the Tigers with Prince Fielder, and then there was Justin Verlander.
Yeah,
but
he got knocked around a little bit.
Apparently, he's dating Kate Upton, so that's good for him.
I'd want the season to end as soon as possible, too. He's gonna pull a Rodney Dangerfield and Caddyshack and be like, "Oh, my arm!"
Exactly.
It might be broken.
I actually had a White Sox fan say to me today that they thought that he threw that game because he's afraid and knows that they won't beat the White Sox in that division. And he's afraid that the White Sox are going to get the World Series, and so he tanked the All-Star game so that the White Sox wouldn't have home field advantage.
Wow. That's well-founded logic right there.
Wow.
Yes.
It's been very hot in Chicago.
Yeah. Way to go, White Sox guy. It was a guy, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it was.
Boss, you had something in the, on the table?
Well, if you're going to stick with baseball, go ahead. I don't want to.
I got nothing right now.
I don't want to derail the baseball train.
Dontrell Willis retired. D-train. Yeah. That D-train derailed.
That's too bad.
He gone?
Terrible.
He gone from baseball.
He gone.
There you go.
There it is. Buckos. Bucko pride.
Shout out to the Buckos.
But let's remember, they were kind of here last year, too.
Yes, but they're better this year.
They are better. They are better.
And we'll be there in April.
Yeah. I spent some time in Pittsburgh in June. Nice city. I've been there before, but...
This June?
It'll be... yeah.
Last month?
Last month.
Did you see them play the Braves?
No, I had a work... there. So,
it is a nice city.
Yeah, it'll be a great frozen city, and the rink's nice.
Here we go. Things I won't do. I just went on MLB.com. I wanted to look at some standings, and there's an advertisement trying to entice me to buy All-Star Game MVP Melky Cabrera's jersey.
Ooh.
Nope.
Ah.
Melky.
Is it game worn?
No.
Yeah.
We were talking about this. Was it, I don't know if it couldn't have been last week. Must have been 2 weeks ago. When they came, we somehow stumbled on. Gladdy, we stumbled upon the All-Star Game merch.
Oh yeah.
What were those T-shirts? They had some T-shirts that they were selling that were terrible. That said like
brutal.
I play for the
National League. We will win. Or,
oh, yeah. Terrible. I saw those, too.
That was their tagline in the commercials, which I think that's okay. But
dude, if they have American League ones of those, I'll buy one.
They did last week. I don't think they're on sale anymore.
You can probably find a Prince Fielder one at cheap rate at this point.
Justin Verlander. I play for the American League. I will have a 45 ERA.
I play for the American League. My girlfriend is hotter than yours.
Yeah.
Good on him.
I do like, I've been listening to Detroit. I listen to like half the day Detroit radio, half the day Chicago radio. You know, gotta be.
Keeps you in touch with the mainland.
Gotta keep in touch with both of my former hometowns. And it's just kind of funny. It's that whole thing with him and. It's just consumed 2 days of sports radio in Detroit. People are depressed about the Red Wings, so they're talking about Verlander instead.
Yeah.
My final point about the Pirates is Andrew McCutchen is good at baseball.
Yes.
Pretty good.
He might be my favorite player right now.
He's very likable.
Yes.
Easy to cheer for.
I don't think I've ever heard anybody say, I don't like Andrew McCutchen.
I don't like Andrew McCutchen.
There you go.
First time. All right. I have nothing against him. I just wanted to get that out of the way for you.
That's awesome.
Appreciate that.
Glad to hear Braves. Braves report. What's going on with the Braves?
We'll be fine.
Anybody hurt?
Johnny Venner's.
All.
Johnny Venner's. Oh, you guys, some guys miss time, which you expect, you know. And I just... When the Braves A lineup is in, it's really deep. That's a long lineup, especially for the Nationals. I mean, there's a lot of nights where Jason Hayward, Brian McCann, Dan Uggler hitting seventh. So there's depth there. The starting pitching's been a little bit of a concern. So
Dust at least your team has not had to play Javi Lopez in the cleanup hole, okay?
No, they haven't.
The infielder, Javi Lopez. Eesh.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like the Mets. You know, what they've done is really adorable, and I'm proud of them. You know.
Gladdy, I found a t-shirt for you.
Yeah?
Commemorating Johan Santana's.
No hitter.
No hitter. It says Nohan.
Yes, yeah, that was the headlines of that time, and yeah,
thought that'd be right up your alley.
Yeah, I love them; they're great. They had a series against the Yankees, and it's in Yankee Stadium. So they had, you know, his DH lineup, and their cleanup hitter was a guy named Scott Hairston. I said, okay, you know what? You're not good enough. Atlanta and Washington are far better than the Mets. I think the Marlins are probably better than the Mets, but they're just weird. And nobody cares about the Phillies.
Yeah. They're old and hurt.
And stupid. So. There's Braves report.
Any other reports? We got the Tiger report.
Jays report. Jays is struggling. Pitching rotation decimated by injuries.
Oh, geez. They got like four guys. Four of their five are out.
Yeah. Joey Bats mashes.
What's that?
Joey Bats mashes.
How? I haven't paid attention. How's Brett Laurie doing?
Nice season. Having a good year.
Encarnacion is playing well.
Having a huge year, yeah. James McDonald is my favorite player on the Pirates.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Right-handed pitcher. He's real good.
Former Doyer.
Did not know that.
Yes. How about Jays of Tomorrow report?
Yeah, what's going on in Lansing? They were
Lugnuts. Right. I was here for the Lansing Lugnuts.
Lugnuts were really good.
First half Midwest League East Division champions. Like by nine
That's
games.
That's a mouthful.
Oh, yeah. Have you been to see the Silverhawks yet?
No.
Oh.
No, not so much.
Down at the Cove? What? I don't even know. Who's their affiliate?
The Diamondbacks.
Oh.
Yeah, that's why.
Said the Indians fan.
Oh, man.
You got any teepee talk, Kevin? You can fill us in here.
I don't know the Japanese way to say they're still shitty.
So. Oh, there we go.
Hey-o.
So I
should tell Kevin doesn't know that I own the domain name tptalk.com.
Nice.
I was going to use it to start up a North Dakota website, but...
but you got cold feet.
Easy. The jokes.
I got bowed down.
Season four.
So, get some ads from Olive Garden there.
While we're at it, I was looking unsuccessfully for that American League. I play for the American League. I will win T-shirt, and instead I found one commemorating the Arizona Wildcats NCAA baseball championship that says Wildcats own Omaha.
Yeah.
I would really like one that says Bulldogs own Omaha.
I'd like one that says Beavers own Omaha. State always beats.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Lugnuts, Lansing Lugnuts in the Single A Midwest League are. Pretty filthy.
Yeah, big pick.
I don't know if they're going to keep. The problem is, I don't know if they're going to keep all their guys around or if they're going to end up moving them up to High A or Double A, but they've got some arms that are just. Just ridiculous.
They could go to Manchester of the Double A Eastern League, right?
Fisher Cats, New Hampshire. Yeah. Fisher Cats.
Yeah.
They've got a starting pitcher with a .72 ERA.
Is that like in 100 innings?
62 innings.
Yeah.
10 starts. 19-year-old, by the way.
Sweet.
So I've been to six major league games this year, and four of them were in Tampa. And I would just like to say for all the nice things that we said about Tampa, and I stand by them, that stadium sucks. When the Braves play there. I saw the Braves and the Jays play there.
Oh, it's like Gladdy Memorial. Yeah.
Wow.
And proud of you for not going during the Frozen Four. You know why? That's not why we're here.
Yeah. Also, props to the Rays, and I'm glad you're not so much on the bandwagon here, but props to the Rays for their turn back the clock uniforms. Even though they didn't have a team back then. I thought those were spectacular.
The Tigers ones were pretty sweet for that game, too.
They captured the spirit of it. Look them up if you haven't seen them.
Yeah, they did a nice job with what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
They executed the game plan.
They got the runner over to second. Gladdy. Nats? Any Nats news?
They're awesome.
I got a Nats question for you. Are they going to actually enforce the innings limit?
You're going to shut them down? The GM hasn't wavered. He has not wavered on that.
Is their GM a he's not a former Braves guy, is he?
No, that's not true.
I'm thinking of somebody else.
You're thinking of the president, Stan Kasten.
Stan Kasten.
Yeah.
He's with Los
Angeles. He's with the Dodgers now, yeah. The thing that's scary about it is that you take, even as good as Strasburg is, their rotation is still elite even without him.
Oh, yeah, they're a good team.
They're real.
Yeah, Gio Gonzalez is dealing.
Yeah, Gio's dealing. Zimmerman's dealing. I mean,
nice work on that one, Kenny Williams.
Yeah. They got a nice club.
Edwin Jackson.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they're good, man. They're good.
What? That's something that's always.
They got John Lannon in Syracuse, AAA.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Who's their fifth starter right now? I don't even know. Detweiler?
Probably.
Let me see if I can pull up their stats. Oh, they got. I forgot about Chinmin Wang.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's been.
Right. This has always baffled me. Why do people?
Teddy is number one.
What's that?
Why Teddy has number one?
I thought you were talking about the movie Ted.
No, I saw that.
And?
You would love it, Buzz.
You did not like it?
No, I thought it was very funny. I liked it.
I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go.
If you're a Family Guy fan, which I know you are,
I am.
Yeah, you'll love it. That's great. And it doesn't veer as much as Family Guy with the, you know, asides and things, but there's some
non sequiturs.
Yeah, you can see them. You know, they stand out a little bit. You know, there's the pop culture references. I was in the theater, and most of the other patrons were college aged, and I think they missed a lot of the jokes because of the culture references. Pop culture references went back too far for that age group. Mm. But being of an advanced age like myself, they were kind of right in the pocket.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, Dowd. The fact that you were in, like, London or whatever.
London.
And you're 21 doesn't mean you wouldn't get a lot of
Buenos Aires.
Let's just say I'm a little older than 21 now.
Yeah, 23, 25.
I'll be 27 this year.
Oh, man.
Wow, the big 27.
Time flies.
Time flies when you live on two continents.
I was gonna say, I've been around for a minute now.
Here's my baseball question.
Okay.
Why do people keep dealing Edwin Jackson?
Yeah, he's been on at least, that I can think of, the Nationals, the Tigers, the Diamondbacks, the White Sox.
Dodgers. Started with the Dodgers.
Well, Rays. I'm saying, like, this is just in the last couple of years. Here, I got it. Here you go.
Yeah, I'm looking at
Dodgers,
his stats.
Dodgers, 03 to 05. Rays from 06 to 08. Tigers in 09, Diamondbacks in 2010, White Sox 2010, 2011, Cardinals in the end of 11, and then Nationals. And those are all like, well, I don't know about the 2010. I don't know about the 2010 Diamondbacks. 2011 Diamondbacks were pretty good, but I think the 10 ones were kind of bad. Nationals this year good. Cardinals last year champions. The White Sox I think were in it in 2010. The Tigers have been respectable since 2006. I don't know. You know, this seems like some pretty good teams he's been on. So,
I mean, he's an innings eater. He gives up a lot of hits, I think.
I didn't know he was born in Germany.
I didn't either. Well, Edwin Jackson, can't you tell? From the name.
But he's not exactly a Schweinsteiger.
No.
That just made, looking at the Nats statistics, I always wondered why he kept getting shipped around. He seems like a fairly valuable guy.
Oh, especially like, you know, the back end of your rotation. I mean, he's
Danny Heatley said.
So, Spain won the European. Andy Murray didn't win Wimbledon.
No, he did not.
I was going to say, the British guy didn't win Wimbledon, and England went out of the European Cup in the quarterfinals on penalty kicks.
Another shocking summer of English sport.
I was going to say, am I talking about 1998, 2002, 2000?
Yeah,
but the Brit is gonna, or I guess he's a UK guy. Isn't he gonna win the? Isn't he the favorite for the Tour de France?
I wouldn't know about that.
Come on,
watch that show. They got Olympics coming up, man. Everything will change.
Yep, they're gonna win the basketball tournament.
Right.
Ron Guidry was a name I came across in some baseball something.
Remember when he was 28 and whatever?
Yeah. You know what his highest voting percentage for the Hall of Fame was?
I'm going to guess 28%.
He was on the ballot 1, 2, 3, about 10 years. No, 9 years. His highest percentage was 8.8%.
Really?
And his career, I mean, his Black Ink and, like, Milestone stuff is unbelievable.
Black Ink. You're such a Saber matrician.
No, I'm that anti-Saber, which is why Black Ink is, you know, leading in actual real categories.
I was going to say, well, what's his batting average on balls and play?
Yeah. Against? His Blurg and his Vorp.
Vorp.
Yeah.
I do like War.
I think that is the most idiotic thing in the world.
What, War?
Yeah. What is it good for?
Oh, you're terrible.
Walked right in. Walked right in. Okay.
That's pretty goddamn impressive.
Sorry, I'm a little young. That one took me a minute.
Come on, you've seen.
Do you even listen to yourself when you talk?
But here's some of the Guidry stuff, just like career highlight stuff. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 6 times finished in the top 7 of Cy Young voting, including winning it once. 5 Gold Gloves, MVP votes 5 times, 170 and 91, 2 World Series champions. Had a span of like 8 out of 9 years where he was over double-digit wins and over 500. So it wasn't like Blylevin, where it was 13 and 15. You know, just like awesome stuff. And I'm not saying he should be in, but he's got to get more than 8% of the vote.
And he was captain of the Yankees, and we all know how much that means to you.
Oh, well, yeah. There it is. So, yeah, that was kind of an interesting... They missed on this guy pretty bad.
I remember his 78 season, which was just ridiculous.
25-3.
Yeah.
Nine shutouts.
25-3 with like a 1-something, 175.
174, nine shutouts. 6.1 hits per nine innings pitched.
That's Maddoxian.
Yeah.
So. Honestly, he probably should have won. Well, the Yankees won in 78.
Yes.
He probably should have won the MVP, but that was back in the day where pitchers didn't win it.
He was second in MVP voting.
Yeah, Jim Rice.
Yeah. Pretty close vote, actually.
So. And since you don't like war, I won't tell you what his wins above replacement was that year.
Yeah, how much better is he than an imaginary minor leaguer? Yeah, I'm not quantifying that.
9.3 games.
Oh, great. That's good. I think war is because those people who like that kind of thing can make up imaginary friends.
I like it for comparison's sake.
Yeah, I like it.
It's interesting to me. I'm not saying that I need to know every guy's win above replacement player, but...
Yeah, I don't wonder.
I think it's interesting under the right circumstances.
And the circumstances are never right.
No, you can't say that. According to Baseball Reference, by the way, his similars include CC Sabathia.
I'd say Gooden, probably.
No. CC Sabathia. Tim Hudson. Roy Oswalt. The Roys.
And Tim Hudson.
The Roys, Oswalt, and Halliday.
Those are good comps.
Eddie Lopat. Saberhagen. He's very similar to Saberhagen.
Yeah, I could buy that.
Sandy Koufax, Lefty Gomez.
They're in.
Chris Carpenter. Jimmy Key.
Yeah, it's a good bunch. Good bunch.
It's a good bunch, but not many Hall of Famers in that bunch.
Just two.
Many future Hall of Famers in that bunch.
Halliday will go in.
Halliday, yes. He's the only one that I can definitively say should go, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not saying, again, I'm just not saying he should be in. I'm saying he should have gotten 30, 40% at least.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So. All right. Let's put a bow tie on this. Any objections to that from the people?
No.
Okay. Good. For James V. Dowd, Kevin Zeese, Mike Autobus, this is Joe Gladyszewski, and this has been the Inch Podcast. Play the yay and the hose heads.
I can't find it.
Oh, no. Well, we'll wait out.
A bunch of hose heads. I'm glad we're done with these guys. Yeah!